Okay, well, can we talk about what happened after the war then?
If you remember, I said one time I rather would fill up that gap between the war for the people we heard came and see, can I do that first?
Yes, sure.
Take 5 minutes. Yeah. Well, immediately after the war, 1921, I got home anyway, it was, 2 years late. Where the war memorial is now, the first year's war memorial, there's a big lamp with three branches to it, or four, I forget which. Not much traffic, but it was a public meeting place, right in the middle of the high street, just there, you see. Every Saturday night there were meetings there, from the same sort of people who are now, communists and Labour Party people, and of course Nationalist Party, with their Union Jacks and that sort of thing, much like what happened the National Front there. They met there, had the rough meetings, but it was pretty good, really, bit of instruction. Then there were the ordinary election meetings, we saw some good ones, but took not much notice of 1924, when the Labour government got in, and they had carried the wishes of beforehand.
What's that? Come on. What's that, man? Making a funny noise. Okay, I hope it's gone away.
Anyway, the fight for conservative, I don't call conservative, Tories at all, but it's a different body of people altogether. But his fight for conservative then, with a country class business, named Campion, and he was made by the Labour Party, MacDonald's government with base, no majority at all, big 200 behind the combined parties. He was made governor of Western Australia, you see, and that left a by-election open in 1924. And that 1924 election was the best for Dorothy Reid that it was, really, because we had so much opportunity to hear people. There were people like Lansbury, Bernard Shaw came down there and spoke. The man, Basil Hall, a sea captain, was a naval captain, was also a Fabian Society man, you see, so he could get everybody apparently. All sorts of people came, and we learned a decent lot from the town hall was absolutely packed for that meeting. And at different times, within 2 or 3 a year, we've had everybody, Hugh Dalton, people of that description, in between those elections, and people to back up the general strike and so forth, trade unionists. Ben Smith, who was finished up this war and this in the first, the Attlee Labour government, as Minister of Food. Heard him speak in those days, long time ago, like that, quite interesting. We don't use a lot. We also heard Sir Philip Snowden and his wife, Mrs. Snowden, who spoke on foreign affairs and the Central European situation at that time, where they were all starving, of course. And it was very interesting. We got a good broad look on the things altogether. And of course, that had a tinge since we had the Fabian book of Fabianism and the inevitability of gradualness and so forth in it. But it was very useful indeed. And as the war came, Attlee came then again just before the war. Robert Morrison came in about 1937. So we had to continue, somebody really good. And there were the local party meetings went on, the public meetings, I mean. And another body there that I omitted to mention, that's the IRP, the Independent Labour Party. A splendid body of people, you know. We're what you call them, our left now, but they were a separate party on their own. And so they did some very useful work and were great back up to the Labour Party. Yeah. They just dropped out after the war because the Labour Party was going ever so well. And the Commonwealth Party, which was a similar party, who you might remember won the election, I forget the name of the election, but air pilot came and won it, knocked out the Conservative person by 19,000 votes, you know, 20,000 majority for years and years and years for the Conservative. Well, he in his Commonwealth Party and the IRP just ceased to exist. They joined in with the
Labour. I was going to say, yes, that's, they joined up.
Yeah. That's right. So the best thing to do, you see. Yeah. So, but that IRP, I enjoyed it ever so much. When the slump came and I got stood over it, Edward's family here, I got an insurance book for Liverpool Victoria Friends Society, and I had to go around that way and met some WEAs, and they had a good debating society down there as well. And I met ever so many down there. And why not forget his name, but he was extremely impressive. And learnt from their meetings down there. They went all over, they were discussion meetings, a small town, they work a club, working class thing.
Where did they used to meet?
I don't know about where they were. We were some room somewhere. Mm-hmm. There was a Labour Club room there, but I think that's appeared since that time. We're talking about in the early 1930s. Mm-hmm. I took the book in 1932, this insurance book, and by then there and from there on over, they met the Whistle. Do you know Jimmy Whistle, Joy Whistle?
No, are they the parents of Robert Whittle?
That's right, yes. Mm. Well, those two were children, as you might say. There was a man named Noel Eade, who was a brother of Tudor Eade, who was the Home Secretary in those days, in that, you know, 1930. He was so cut up by the war that he was going to make an organisation. There'd be no more war. And he called the International Friendship League, IFL, you see. And after the time I was mayor, there was somebody reviving it again here and there, but if not anywhere nowadays, but the owners board would want to, you see. But I mentioned it, where all the work was done, you see. He was very much Labour, of course, but his his energies and his fighting were all done regardless of any Labour Party opinions. I mean, much like, as I told you, Frank Hancock, the pessimist who'd been one year, he fought Ernest Bevin. Ernest Bevin was made a cabinet minister and he hadn't got a seat, you remember, just after the war. And the Labour Party had been in David Lloyd's, a man named Hancock had fought Churchill, you see. So they had Churchill down Lloyd. But Ernest Bevin, when he put up, Frank Hancock, our own candidate here, he opposed Bevin. On pacifist lines, as it were. Very foolish way going on, really. By the way, my brother CIO, John Locke says enthusiasm makes it, but if you don't care to go all over the place. Well, Frank fought this on pessimist grounds just after that war with the left-wing government containing thousands of them in their supporters, thousands of pessimists, chose that time to fight. Ernest Bevin, who was Minister of Labour all through the war, and arranged everything, you see, and what the Dockers, Casey, and it stopped the invasion or the going to help Russia, that was starting to handle the Russia movement, which was started to be, you know, somewhere at the end of the war. And he was mainly the man who kind of organised all that sort of thing. Even a battalion of the KR, as I understand, not mine, wouldn't go away from Dover. Well, I know I was in India in one of their battalions, but I didn't into it. That's what I heard. Well, Hancock took opposed Bevin in Woolwich of all places, you know. Couldn't see how they made their living for counting shears, making cannons or whatnot. You know, Frank was a good example of it. I used to say, I didn't call him, he's much too nice a bloke to annoy him, but I used to always imagine when somebody was punch drunk, mentally punch drunk on this one subject, you see. Now, however nice he was, I was having kind, he was No, nothing was to alter it.
Do you remember anything about the Peace Pledge Union?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't belong to that. Dorothy put her name there, but I didn't, because by this time Frank was always getting the things, and when he was a candidate here, you see. I had to lay up, as I told you, in 1935 when this fine assembly came. So I didn't know it, but in the soldiers we had, which were at that time, then Watergate Lane. Then Watergate Lane, on the left, there's a long, low stone building now. Well, when I was a kid, they were, that was a long wooden building. It was ever so long, you see. It had five seats each side of the gangway, five seats, that's all. So much wider this one. Oh, less than this one. And it was, and right then it was used as a cinema, on the other side of the cinema. You know? And that stood there after the war and during the 1930s, everybody could use a highway and use it, you see. Various people used it. And the Quakers and the Labour had a meeting there, you see. And but that time, by that time, it was too late in the day. You could see what was coming. Julian Bell, he was a friend of ours and came to our house regularly. Do you remember Julian Bell?
I know of his connection with Quentin Bell, but I don't.
That's right, brother. Yes. He's our elder brother. He appeared, you see. When we first did a play meeting in the WA, we were fortunate enough to, for, he used to come in healthy, fortunate enough to him to be the poet cousins. He'd done everything well, you know. Mm. Anyway, and I said no to that. I simply couldn't agree, you know, like laying it on a railway track or something. Mm. And she put her name down. She said, I'll put my name down. Shan't I go child for me? But that's how it worked. Mm. But it was kept going. Towards the end, we came.
Well, in fact, there was a contingent from the Peace Pledge Union up at the Hyde Park
on Sunday.
They had the banner there. Mm. The
they there. Still send us things sometimes, you know. Yeah. And the, what's the other one? Oh, you know, it means Fellowship of Reconciliation.
Yeah,
they often send us bills now, you know, little notices now. Yeah. So I suppose they look around and dig us up. So we didn't, Dorothy put a name for the Peace Pledge Union, but I didn't, and as I told you, the women, the people who did go, they got, after the war, when things, you could have made things go nice and happily, they, I did mention this before, and they just sat there and booed him, and my girls called them boo this, because I took them along to the meeting. Mm. They booed me over somebody, hurt, you see, and what could you do about it? There were about 13 million people walking about Europe, marching, going. All you could do was send them what things you could. The girls send them chocolates, very, very rare, very much rationed. Send the German girls. That was pinched. We sent back battered, the empty thing. And an apology from the post office or from somebody in Germany. You know, might have been pinched.
Yeah. Anyway, I just. See what happened to the tea.
Is it going on?
Yeah, well, you were going to tell me about the growth of the Labour Party in Lewis after the Second War.
Because I can do that better because I'll just take a break part in it.
Yeah.
I did tell you, well, you probably, a chap named Robert Biggs lives at Field End along Kingston Lane, just on the right hand side. He is he married a cousin of mine, you see. So I got to know him. But when I was into the Labour Party, when I was ill before the ill was back, during those years, I was just working, exhausting myself, and didn't, had to cut in everything to concentrate on getting it that we did want. And he was a Labour Party secretary, you see. And I used to give the girls a walk out there. I used to make the girls walk. Used to make out we were the, the 100-year night march from the Red Star over China, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we used to get them along. He's the guy, they said, Ekman was in this, Robert did, and he, I remember going to, he'd seen burning great big bundles on Sunday morning of papers in college he got, these, and, you know, I just feel sorry for him. All Labour Party stuff, or stuff connected with the Labour Party each year, he'd burn up all he didn't want, you know. Well, when the war was nearly over, we started the Labour Party going again here, properly, and I did bring myself into it, and I thought that poor devil's coming back. And the Labour Party would be not here, you know.
Yes.
If somebody didn't know, so we everybody took a hand in it, you know. Yes. And we didn't have much of an organisation for us all, but it was sounding what it was a people's ear, people's movement, the whole lot was saying, geez, all for these toys. Listen, the bill said then, the blackout is finished, now out with the Tory blues, and so forth.
And what was the strength of feeling? I mean, why were people so fed up with the Tories? Because, I mean, it always seems very strange to generations after the war that someone like Churchill had virtually won, you know, I mean, it looks like, you know, it was Churchill's leadership which won the war, and then everyone was fed up with the Tories. I mean, what was the... Why were people so fed up with them?
Well, because it was bad. There was some good propagandists about. There's a book called Guilty Men. You see, that came during the war. And there was a notice in one of the papers, I forget which paper, or periodical, which said this could win any election. Well, but it mentioned civil people. There were some bad people, bad men were bought. Churchill, whenever you hear the war take and make now, Reagan has just done down there wireless. What a wonderful man Churchill was. See? So he is. He's one of these people who thrive when there's unrest about, you know, the general strike. He took over as, you know, chief in command against the workers, the miners, you see, and the general strikers. But when the he was also hooked at the Tory party because he wanted them to fight Germany, you see. This man, he got in his blood. He fired as a newspaper reporter in the Boer War. That's what he's taken prisoner for. A newspaper firing on the crowd, on the Boer subway, you know. Anyway, as he thought, he's wondering. As the 1940 drew near, it was absolutely certain there was going to be a war by that time, and that's when I said, no, I'll keep out of it now, you see. Out of the movement, peace movement now, because it's no good putting it under the wing. And as I told you, I had two girls, and I listened one morning to some German woman speaking. It was really dreadful, you know. And they were, I know, Hegel's not the worst, and certainly not Nietzsche, but they were the master race people, you see. They, and they were, the men could go into the German army if they liked. But the women would go to make German soldiers, you see, and so forth. Well, anybody who talks about getting space, well, I said last week, fitting, but to pick up their bond, I think, we'd never fight. But, I mean, that sort of thing, you couldn't put up with that, and old Lord Hawthor and all that sort of thing. But the worst of it is, they were there. In no time, they were down. I believe you asked me this before, Ben, about there's some books at home I've got still, London, during the raid, and the Battle of Calais and that. The Battle of Calais was a blow to Hitler, a blow to us. Calais was captured, and the advance down the coast was stopped, you see, and they had to say, we'd sweep in and come up, you know, from south to north to get a bit opposite Dieppe, or to, you know, the southeast of England generally. To ask anybody not to fight in these cases, I don't know. I only know one lovable case of theirs. As I was going to biking to people with this enthusiasm, life is quite right. They go all haywire. this happened once, twice in one day. I had to bike to, from north to New Haven and all the way to the country. I did about 6,000 miles a year, you know, on this bike. And going along south over High Street, I'm wondering what I want to do, what's going to happen here. They got to keep Dieg. Was in the home guard then, that was just started with training away. It's a bloke friend, but makes me go on for if I don't work with. I was working along seat over High Street, and another insurance man stopped me. He said, "How are you going on?" And I said, "All right." Nice day. I had a bit of a devil, Jerry nearly cracked up. "What are you talking about?" I said, "Jerry's got a DM to me. Want the hospital ship in Dieppe Harbour. See, anything." They now said, "Anything. They want the harbour blocked up, that's all. Place full of wounded, or could have been, but it didn't. And there's not too many in there. One to block the harbour up, you see, all this sort of thing." And he said, "Oh, I can't help that." He said, "Don't you, Charlie?" It made that same old familiar. "You go ahead now, but I've got to earn my commissions and so have you," you know. Well, you know, that sort of thing, but you want to. I used to think, if a man, I tried to think of these things, I was very keen on the Patrick Moon, and Frank, as I say, was a friend of mine, and a lot of people met. But it always seemed that if it comes to the point, it's like the tail of the mad dog, isn't it? Or the dog coming, it's all right, he won't bite you, he don't bite. And the bloke saying, "Well, I know you, he might not, but does he know? You know and I know," he said, "but does he know? Does a dog know?"
But just getting back to the sort of just after the war, I mean, one of the things that people often say is that one of the reasons why people were so against the Tories was because of the beverage thing. I mean, was that very important, do you think?
Yes, the beverage was important. Now, with Fitzwilliam Churchill, we put Churchill in. You don't know what they say. 232 Tories voted against in that national government, if we were the bits of the opposition. 232 Tories voted to keep him out. The name of Beamish was here, this Beamish has just gone, his father, was the mum. And after the war, when they see him, boo, they used to boo him, you see, but he hadn't been leader for a year, elected mostly by the Labour, the Liberal, and a few Tories, when he was offered the leadership of the Tory party, he became one of them. After the war, they just treated him like a saint.
Yeah.
Well, this is all bullshit, you know.
But except that, you know, that's what's puzzling, that here was this man who, you know, almost, I mean, I know he didn't, but I mean, it looks as though he almost single-handed won the war.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And yet, you know, the Tories were wiped out in the election.
Yeah, that's right.
It's puzzling.
The people knew Churchill, you see. When he was chosen, see, by the spring of night, that we had 9 months phoned in the spring, they come in, and they said, "Oh, what we could do this so later on, why, to collect money off the other go." And that was, everybody had something to say, they were, especially in insurance brokers, the old chaps from in the pubs and that. And the general thing that I took up myself, he has got one main point, and that's what the Labour Party saw when they proposed him to be the leader. They get rid of Neville Chamberlain, make him leader. He is a parliamentarian, you see. He'll fight like hell to stop anything going against his what he was brought up on, and he made a good figurehead, you see. And when he's in times of unrest, he'd go up. He'd come to the top. After the war, collapse, nothing. He went to Spain to have a paint and you know something. Hackney was a good deal. Hackney was also in the war. Herbert Morrison was Home Secretary in a burning London. Think, that's the sort of jobs that the Airblows had. And the food ministers and so forth. The Labour bloke was Clines, was food minister in the first war. You know, which was worse than this because there was no
food.
It was unheard of to feed the public then anyway, in the soup kitchen. Yeah.
So anyway, you felt that because people had kept the Labour Party going before the war, you wanted to make sure there was something for them to come back to.
Yeah, then, I think this one mostly, you see. Yeah. I was thinking about a campaign there if they were war.
So
he was a prisoner. He didn't come back for some time. And he seems to have dropped out now, but I do see him have a chat sometimes. He never appeared in the Labour Party anymore.
So, but did you go about starting it up then? I mean, what did you do?
Whoever had it going then, it was run by itself, you know, anyhow, in Tom Paine's house. I knew the bloke Tom Paine because he also, the bloke who had Tom Paine's house, I forget his name now, but he's also a sergeant in the Home Guard, you see. And I just only knew him by sight, that's all. But after the war, we started up again, and I had to go in and find people. And I hadn't found him, but somebody gave me a notice to send there, I see. So, I might have mentioned thanking the Home Guard and get it on the top to make sure they answered. And when I was going back to work, to Baxter at dinner time, he came down the high street, you know, this chap, and he said, you are what sergeant? Well, I said, yeah. He said, well, I'll give you a few tips, you see. I'll pay you. He paid a couple of quid or whatever it was. It was only £6 a year, but he paid a nice thing. And he said, we'll go in the Dolphin, if you don't mind losing a 4 hours. So I said, no. They shut it up, passed through the pubs. The Dolphin was down St Nicholas Lane a little way. You know, where Baxter is, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a sweet shop there now. And on the other side, there's a shop called Flint's.
Yeah, on the main arts.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, St Nicholas Lane was called, went between them two, I think.
Yeah.
Used to say, their baker name's Stones, and Flint's, the cocky people, used to say when we were kids, what's the difference? What comes between Stones and Flint's? What's the difference? And he said, you know, this lane.
Yeah.
And then there, only a few yards down, there was this pub called the Dolphin Lane. And we had a drink, and he told me, he said, if you're going to start the party going, let me give you a warning on two or three things, because I'm going away. But he gave me, he said, I'm quite sympathetic. But they want to do things at that place, you know, use it more as a showcase. And then after a silence, he said, you have to look after one person, you know. So I said, who's that? He said, Mrs. Reed. Dreadful, he said, here. Well, we knew Mrs. Reed had been in it just before, you know, before I laid up in my bed, in mid-30s I came to Reed. Frank was a splendid fellow, but Mrs. Reed, she was a bit funny then.
That's Dorothy, is it?
Dorothy Reed, yeah. I'm not speaking ill of them, but Frank was a jolly good person, but Dorothy was a bit of a devil. And
In what sort of way?
Well, I think she kind of upset everything, apparently. He couldn't tell me exactly what way. He said, just look out what happens, he said, because you'll have no party left. My goodness, it wouldn't in no time, you know. She was glad he kind of got under, as it were. We went on this, we came at all a lot, called a meeting together and started it going. With his usual casualties first of all, we got a man from a Parker, who was a county councillor and a very good political man. I heard him speak before, about 1924, yeah. On the Labour behalf.
A county councillor?
County councillor.
I mean, a Labour councillor.
Yes, Labour.
So when, well, when were we electing Labour County Councillors then?
Well, this was in Higega, New Haven. It was well during the in the 1930s certainly, 1932 and onwards.
Yeah.
And I heard him speak in the 1931 election.
Yeah.
And putting on the main platform up.
You mean we actually were electing Labour councillors in around New Haven, during the time of Baldwin's government.
Yeah.
Good.
New Haven was a good place, you see. When even before then, when Milner Black put up in 1922, I heard a man say that Camden or some whoever put up there, Milner Black, our man was from Barton, said, "You stir them up," he said. He was phoning, you see, and overheard. "Stir them up in New Haven, in the countryside in particular," he said. "New Haven's black mad." Yeah. So there were people, there were things about it.
Yeah.
And New Haven was a really a stronghold. New Haven to us was like a Bermondsey would be, to say, wasn't they?
Well, it's a shame it's gone into decline, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's gone into decline a lot there.
Anyway,
New Haven, as I say, so very working class, they had no aristocracy, as I mean.
Well, I know, I mean,
except the custom blokes.
Yeah.
And they were in it, they were in the Labour Party, because they used to come to our house sometimes for meetings and so on.
Yeah.
You know, when the constituency met, committee for the constituency met, they used to come up with at their rooms here.
But anyway, do you remember much about your first meeting then? I mean, after the war? I mean,
oh, yes,
do you know who
the war,
was there?
After the war, it bloomed nicely, you see.
Mm-hmm. I mean, who was in it apart from Dorothy?
There was Bob Tapp, of course.
Yeah.
The Rees were in it. But I can't think of all the names, but there were quite a number of them I could think of if I. Quite a number of people.
John Buckwell was here.
Oh, John Buckwell, yeah. John arrived a bit later.
But
he was in the Navy. He was called up. He's my age, but he was in the Navy time serving. Didn't get into the Navy till 1927 or something. Then he had to be in the Naval Reserve, and he was called up when the Second War started. Yeah. And he was invaded in the Mediterranean for a long time, then from there up to the Roman coast, you know. Anyway, while he was there, poor Mrs. Buckwell, the tanks used to come in, and fighting tanks came through, and one of them ran into the wall. There was an arch, a little shed, like, you know, brick plate, where a shoemaker was, in Say Street, and she was in there doing the shoes, and this tank pushed the whole lot over. She wasn't injured, except that she was, her thigh was simply peppered with brads from this, where they went all over the place from the shoemaker's thing. Well, scrunched them and shot them all over. Anyway, Jack was there, came a bit later, because he did come home. He was very, very keen when he did come back. And he was, he was quite a useful bloke. He and I knew each other at school. When there was a huge chap called Ockerty Page, and he ran the whole school, you see, big with up-nail boots on and so forth. And we used to, all the kids were getting cowed. And Jack says, let's fight him together. I can't let you fight him together. I had plenty of fights because I had a young brother and I could fight six. But my old man always made me. I can wrestle him then or do anything, all sorts of things. Jack says, and this fellow, he sportingly took us on. Why do he say? After school, in front of the powers, we went to that school gate, under those trees. We fought there. He charged to call out of the way. I resisted from tripping him up, and he went by, but he caught John, and John had to stand up for a moment, so I kind of climbed on him and pumped him in the ears from behind. He was some packed up, you know. Nice. I went to the choir practice from the choir then, at the age of 12 or 13 or something, and along Lancaster Street, not a soul inside. There's no traffic, it's all dead at night time, you see. And they come up with you along the road. So I go to choir practice anyway. He looked at me and I looked at him and said, "Oh, right, don't worry, kid, that's all right." No, shook hands, he didn't. I suppose he'd been considered smart or something. I told him, if he had this one, I said, "Well, Lord, who's talking about him, really?" It was a bit of a night. But John and I were pals, we were pals enough to do that then. And so we took good old pleasure in fighting together. At the end of 1945, we did put the election. Bob Tapp was chairman of the general meeting, you know, the evil poll meeting. And we got 18,000 votes for Bert Orban.
And this is what? This is the
1945 election.
The general election.
Yeah, the general election. Yeah. The other elections were in the autumn in those days, you know, the November, yeah. The municipal ones. When the municipal numbers came about on the council, we each ran 13 candidates. There was the Labour Party and the Tory Party. They were called Tory Party in the Times, the Conservative people for Lewin. They won all 13 seats they did. But they said they were the Ratepayers League or something like that. And the third one was the breakaway from the Ratepayers League by old Bill Penfold. Did you know Bill Penfold? You might have known.
Yes.
Yeah, just a bit, I suppose. Yeah. He was on the case for a long time, I think.
The bonfire man.
Yeah, that's right, man on bonfires. Yeah. He started one of his own. So he had 13 candidates. We had 13 candidates, and the ratepayers themselves had 13 candidates.
And this is the municipal elections,
yeah, municipal,
and what? And the Tories won all 13?
That won all 13. Yeah.
That was when? 1945?
1945.
Well, isn't that strange?
I mentioned that because Jack was beaten by 35. No, Jack was beaten by 30. I had five more, less than him, though.
Yeah.
The majority, my majority was against me, was five more than his. So
and was it kind of, was it warded, or was it the whole of Lewis?
No, warded.
So yeah,
Bridge Castle and Priory.
It was the same as now.
Yeah, yeah. It's all the same all round, but we were nearest in this.
Yes.
And there's a chap named Maidment, I don't know if you know him, but his wife's a big, his widow was a big now. He joined us and he said that if you were to do the cliff properly, there's plenty of votes down there. He worked for the County Council and he typed a nice sort of thing there before on secretary, you know, the pages of the a roll then, all neatly done and rather artistic, with for each ward, you see. And his message read, "These, there you are, and now, as I say, now, the castle looks all wrong, we should win that, Priory not much up, and Bridge lousy." He wrote on there, lousy. But they did come together. And you know, John, I used to buy into all the collection myself. I used to want to deliver it myself for some time. And I bought right at the end of Morling Down, right at the end of South Street, near the snowdrop, all over the place in Lewis, and you know, some up there, New River, up in Dames Estate and Dufferin Estate. Mm-hmm. And everybody did a bit like that. We had great help from the co-op. They were marvellous, the co-op movement, I mean.
Yeah.
They were marvellous people. And the Brighton co-op, not the Lewis one, there was a different one in those days. So they wouldn't lend us a room, wouldn't hire us a room. So Frank agreed to let's all go to the meeting, the annual general meeting, or half yearly meeting, isn't it? When they decide what the dividends to be and so forth. And so went there and I knew that if you owned a hall, and you let it out for hire, you can go to anybody, you know. Whether you were, short as the armaments and the major barber, whether you're a priest or whatever you are, or a murderer, you've got to sell your weapons. It's land of undershafts, it's heroism, motto as an armourer. And on those lines, and we didn't get. They didn't pass, I think, but they closed their thing. So it's the order in the general after the 11th proper one, you know, they've just a committee, they were a special committee for that meeting for that one. We just got beat. But in the proper one, to join with the Brighton one, we had a terrific surname, you know. This had a branch in Duckfield and there's one here. And I don't know where else, it might have one up country further, but the age had to pass it, and then a general meeting had to be in the town hall. And it was a terrific meeting, you know. And some chap said to me, they're very kind people, are you know? I hadn't spoken to him much, but I knew who he was. And he said, I thought he was old gent. Because they all had money in the co-op, because they paid 6% when it was down. And he said, you've got a Tory meeting here, Charlie. Never mind, keep on trying. So it was all right, you know. But it was a terrific meeting there, you know. And we got beat. And we didn't get it in going with Brighton to make 1959, I think, when all that luck was gone. They were run by Everest people, Phoenix Iron Rogers, they did dust to this, I was mentioned about last time. Mm. And that's who had the, it's one of the good jobs they did do, if they ever co-op, their co-op, back a co-op thing, huh? In the meetings after the war, in the general election meeting, we had better meetings than them, better meetings than the Tory, better meetings than the Liberal. And at one place, out at Ringmer, opened their meetings on the Green, all the people came to vote in. And Beamish, young Beamish now, is quite quiet. Actually, he's quite youthful, youthful really. In his noddle, you know. He didn't believe there'd been anything before the war. He had noticed it when he was at Sandhurst, I suppose.
No, well, you wouldn't see much of it there, I suppose.
And he said, make sure not to clash together on the village greens anywhere. Yeah. Oh, right, well, I was talking to so-and-so. Or anybody likes it. He said, you only like to go on with him, of course. They said, no. It was very good, yeah. And we're also from the Fabian Society had a one on the Green at Ringwood. As when people come into church, you know, during the service, and as they come in, they all join in, some of them would, you know. It's their curiosity. Mm. We had some good blokes there, you know, parliamentarians. And that's where Dorothy and I got to know a lot more. We had Bob Mellish stop with us for lodging, you see, when he just got to be MP for Bermondsey. Mm-hmm. We had Dr. King, and we had Richard Marsh when he was a
late man.
Yeah. And who was that man? Richard Marsh. I can't think of the name. It's the same name as the man who's on the wireless in the Rawlings. Not with Brett, some such name as that. Well, I don't know his name. He's been there. A man from Yorkshire, a constituency, he had to speak at our meeting. We put him up there, and he did differently through the time. Because after the victory, the Labour blokes went, the candidates and the MPs, they all went out for it, you know. And each one I noticed said, any questions on any subject, you see. They showed up the old pre-war Tory ignorance of, you know, or refusing to speak to you because you were lonely. Any subject you like, we're talking about, you know. Mm-hmm. We did a lot in that way, and there was a, what Dorothy did was a good thing, was she was made divisional secretary, the Gordon constituency secretary, and I don't know, not at all, this Bounty was wanted to be a doctor, you see, and they got a doctor, she had to get a doctor to speak on the night of the by order of the constituency committee, on the 1968 when the how that was passed and who came into force, you see.
48,
yes, sorry. And bloke spoke there, a doctor, but she's heard the head force of Labour Party hadn't sent anybody, so she implored, they said, we'll send him. I didn't know this, she told me, we're sending Dr. Jaeger from there.
Jaeger,
that's his wife's alive still, isn't she? Yeah. And Dorothy, it's too late, I've got somebody in there, and she got this bloke. And I'm a bit of a communist, I think, but he's also good. This doctor, they put a poll in among the doctors in this district. I don't know how big the district was. It was only 1-4, that was this bloke. The rest was all against it, those doctors of those days. All against
well,
it.
Well, they still 300 to 1,
it was. And she got a masterly touch. She got this to come and speak in their meeting up in the lecture room. And it brought all the nurses and all the doctors.